The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Big Ten has spoken out again, so what's it mean for recruiting? A star quarterback is opting out. Plus, we're going to talk to Texas A&M head coach Jimbo Fisher. It's a stacked edition of College Football Live. Desmond Howard, Greg McElroy, Tom Luganville. I'm Jason Fitz. And, gentlemen, it's going to be a darn good show because this shirt-tie combo I got going is spectacular. I told you I'd get to it in less than 30 seconds. Feeling swagger today. Come on, Des.
Like, didn't you take you long, pal.
Oh, come on. All right. If there's one thing I know, there's two things I know. Right now, number one, this shirt-tie combo is spectacular. Number two is every day we have a new developing story with the Big Ten. So let's get to what we found out last night as we got more information from Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren releasing a statement yesterday saying, in part, quote, the decision was thorough and deliberative and based on sound feedback, guidance, and advice from medical experts. Despite the decision to postpone fall sports, we continue our work to find a path forward that creates a healthy and safe environment for all Big Ten student athletes to compete in the sports they love in a manner that helps to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and protects both student athletes and the surrounding communities. Now, with that being said, prominent coaches and players continue to speak out, including Penn State head coach James Franklin and Michigan tight end Nick Eubanks.
I don't necessarily have a issue with the decision, you know, but I have an issue with the process, and I got an issue with the timing. You know, it was challenging to keep getting up in front of my team and getting up in front of my parents and not having answers to their questions. When you make a decision of this magnitude that affects so many people, on such a significant level, maybe the most important decision in the history of the Big Ten, it wasn't made in ambiguity. It wasn't vague. There's no way we made this decision without everybody being clear on what the decision was.
I mean, what I've been hearing, they've been basically doing the same thing we've been doing. They're going along with it. You know, they're going to test a lot of guys positive. If there is, they're handling it well. And, I mean, honestly, I think we could have did the same thing for our conference as well as other conference. But, I mean, it's quite frustrating, you know, cause a lot of guys had a lot riding on this season coming up. And just for it to get shut down, you know, it really hurts a lot of teammates and players.
As this story continues to develop, we always have ESPN College Football reporter Heather Dinich on speed dial. Heather, thanks for your time. You've had the opportunity to speak directly to Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren. So what has he told you about this decision?
Well, he recognized exactly what James Franklin was talking about, and he conceded that he could have done a better job communicating with athletic directors, with coaches. There was a gap between the decision that was made at the presidential level and how that trickled down to the coaches. And Franklin was right. He's not the only one who expressed that frustration because they have to look in their players' eyes and answer questions, and they did not have the answers to those questions. So Kevin Warren said he recognized that, and if there was one thing that he could do differently, it would be doing a better job communicating internally and externally.
Heather, one of the things that has surprised me in his statements is that they've made it clear they intend to move forward. How can the Big Ten move forward at this point?
Well, that's part of the frustration on the part of the parents is that they made the decision and they didn't say, okay, this is what we're going to do in terms of the spring. But nobody has been able to do that because they spent so much time focusing on how to get their athletes and coaches on the field in the fall and get that schedule presented, that 10-game conference-only schedule. So now they turn the page. They can do it by considering the winter as well. I've heard that they have contemplated maybe playing in domes in the Big Ten. So there are options, there are concepts that are floating out there, but at the end of the day, nobody knows if they will be able to play in the spring because there's still a concern that the coronavirus pandemic will be equally as detrimental and troublesome as it is right now.
Heather, as always, we appreciate your insight and expertise. Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. So let's get over to our panel at this point. Desmond, we'll start with you. What's your reaction to the statement that you've seen from Kevin Warren?
Wow, I tell you what, Jason, I thought that it was long overdue, obviously. He addressed some things that we had talked about throughout the earlier part of the week. One of the things was there was actually a vote. I don't know if you guys remember, but the AD from Penn State, who is supposed to communicate with her president and communicate with her coach, James Franklin, earlier in the week said she wasn't sure that there was a vote. To me, that's throwing her president under the bus because the presidents and chancellors were a part of the vote. So that jumped out. And then obviously he said, hey, this will not be revisited. So exclamation point, period, end of discussion. We won't have a season in the fall. I like the fact that Heather had alluded to maybe something in the winter or spring season. They will move forward and try to figure that out. But those are the things from the statement that that jumped out at me, Greg.
And Dez, at some point, though, Kevin Warren's going to have to address the players and address the parents. And he's not going to be able to protect himself by writing a letter. That letter was transparency, but it was really a broadcast more than was anything else. It wasn't two-way dialogue. At some point, he's going to have to address in a live press conference-type setting. He's going to have to address the difficult questions that need to be raised. Why was it done the way it was done? What changed from when you released the schedule to when you actually decided to change the season? And why is it that you are not allowing individual universities within the Big Ten to potentially pursue opportunities for their players if they think it's okay or safe enough to play? He's going to have to address all those, and he doesn't owe us an explanation. He doesn't owe Dez an explanation. He doesn't owe Luke an explanation. Who he owes an explanation to are the players. And at this point right now, those players and those players' parents have yet to receive an explanation that they're fully comfortable with. They're expected to be in Chicago tomorrow. We'll see whether or not they can get the answers they desire, Tom.
Yeah, and I think his one-sided statement was a bit ambiguous, was a bit vague. I think what people want here is details. They want specific data as to why the Big Ten chose to do this, the timing of why they chose to do this. And when I say specific details, I think you've got to have medical information that very clearly defines in details exactly what led this conference to make the decision. And you know what? If you provide that, then you're going to take a lot of heat off of your back. Let's not forget, outside of Northwestern, these are public institutions. So there's going to be taxpayers in each one of these states that are going to start saying, hey, wait a minute. Where are the details as to why we made this decision to not go forward and play in the fall?
Well, and with that being said, gentlemen, I think it's clear that until we get more detail, whether it comes from the commissioner or whether it comes from individual schools, parents and their families and fans are not going to stop demanding it. So we'll keep breaking it down. In the meantime, as of right now, the SEC is still playing and Texas A&M facing a gauntlet of a schedule. We'll talk to head coach Jimbo Fisher coming up. And Ole Miss head coach Lane Kiffin, never afraid to stir the pot, speak his mind. He did that with his latest suggestion for how to handle postponed seasons for players. You'll hear about it next.
College Football Live is brought to you by USAA, proud supporter of the military community. What you're made of, we're made for.
Welcome back to College Football Live. Every single day we've got an eye on opt-outs. And again, we've got some new news coming there in the form of quarterback opting out. Georgia State quarterback Michele Colasurdo has opted out of the upcoming season. His statement in part, today I was diagnosed with a heart condition as a result of my COVID-19 infection. Unfortunately, this means that I will not be able to play this football season. I'm very thankful for everyone who has reached out and prayed for me. I'm also incredibly thankful for Coach Elliott and Trainer Bob for providing a safe environment for us to train and practice. Ultimately, it was the procedures and tests set forth by GSU that allowed the doctors to find this condition in my heart and keep me safe. I'm very thankful. I can't wait to watch my team compete this fall, and I could not be more excited to return for the 2021 season. Go Panthers. So this raises an interesting question, and Dez, we'll start with you on this. As a former player, when you see other players, if there are players right now looking at opting out or having these heart conditions, how does it affect other players within the sport that are watching this?
I think if I'm a guy's teammate like that and he opted out because of a heart condition, I mean, that's a very, very serious situation. And I think that's is really similar to what happened to Hank Gathers, too, when he collapsed on the basketball court. So knowing that, you know, this could be something that could be fatal is something not to be taken lightly. And I would definitely, if I'm a player, want to get checked to make sure I don't have the same issue that he has, you know, and just wish him the best and make sure we take all the necessary precautions moving forward. But that's the way I would approach that, especially if I'm that young man's teammate.
Yeah, no question, Dez. I think, you know, that statement, I came away with two things. Number one, it puts a face to whether it's myocarditis, he didn't mention that in the statement, but a heart condition associated with COVID-19. But secondly, what it also does is it shows you towards the latter portion of that statement that it's treatable. And when detected and the proper protocols and procedures are in place to examine your student athletes, then you identify it and you work towards a resolution, as you heard him state there that he's really excited to get back for the 2021 season. So that's a good sign in all of this. It's not all negative here.
And then the more information we have, the more we can make having an echocardiogram part of our protocols if a guy tests positive. He referenced the fact, hey, I might not have found this issue with my heart if it weren't for GSU's medical staff, if it weren't for Coach Elliott, and if it weren't for everything that they put in place to try to make us feel safe and to make us feel healthy as we try to navigate into this college football season. So I think now that we're learning more and more information about whether or not myocarditis is correlated with COVID-19 and the long-term effects of that potentially, then we just make our protocols include something that would evaluate the heart on a regular basis until we find out whether or not myocarditis is there or carditis is not there. So I think this was obviously a very scary situation. I'm glad they found it prior to him taking the field this fall.
Well, and all of you make a very good point. It seems like some of these things are going to be inevitable. So the question becomes, how treatable is it, and how does everybody move forward? That's information we need to get. Speaking of moving forward, the NCAA is moving forward with some guidelines on how to handle some things. They've taken a look at what's going to be happening for teams not playing this fall. Teams will be capped at a max of 12 hours per week of practice, and eligibility for any player that doesn't play a complete season due to the virus will be frozen. That raises a really interesting question about recruiting and what it means. So let's go to our resident recruiting expert, Tom Luganville. Lugs, what does all of this do to the recruiting world?
Well, the NCAA is hoping that by instituting an eligibility freeze, that they are going to limit what could be a mass exodus of player transfers and jumping into the player portal by essentially saying, hey, listen, you don't have to flee. We're not going to take anything away from you here. But as always in recruiting, the devil's in the details, right, guys? How does this affect your APR numbers? How does this affect your overall scholarship limits? Are they going to now extend scholarship limits because you're going to add a whole year of scholarship expenditures to this entire equation? So that's a big deal financially. And then are the players going to be able to have their cake and eat it too? In essence, if a player still chooses to transfer, will that player be able to transfer, play at another place, but not lose that year of eligibility and still have another year after that? And those are questions that right now we don't quite have clear answers to.
Yeah, Luke and Bill, you're right. And I thought that I actually thought that maybe Justin Fields would transfer out of Ohio State and transfer back to Georgia. And would they have to deal with that issue? They're playing football in the SEC, I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure Kirby Smart would love to have them. But I wondered how would the NCAA handle a situation like that, since he transferred once already. And would he be able to transfer under these conditions and still play that same season? So it seems like there are a lot of kinks in this that they need to iron out. They need to figure it out. But there's no doubt in my mind, I think you guys agree, that under the circumstances, the present circumstances, they should be allowed to transfer and play immediately.
There's one concern and one thing I'm very excited about when it comes to this rule. I'll start with the thing I'm very concerned about. I'm worried about the sophomores and juniors in high school right now, because there will be a financial burden, whether it be on the Power Five or the Group of Five. If, in fact, scholarship numbers are inflated all the way to, in some cases, maybe 110, then how many schools can afford those additional 25 scholarships way down the road? At some point, they're going to have to cut the recruiting classes, which can allow fewer opportunities for guys that are trying to transition from high school to college a couple years from now. But let's not worry about that at this point. The other thing I'm hopeful and optimistic this might do, guys, for a while I've been pushing, let's just get rid of redshirting. Let's just get rid of it. It's over. It's tired. We don't need it anymore. Freshmen to be able to play for a very, very long time. Let's get rid of redshirting, and let's just say when you sign at our university, it's no longer a four-year scholarship. You automatically get 5 years, and you don't have to have the four-game rule. You don't have to have any of those things. And when you sign, you can play for five. You can stay for four. You can stay for three. As long as you want to stay, that's fine. But you have 5 years of eligibility, and that needs, I think, to be a sweeping change that we've been pushing for a number of years because of the issues and the way people have taken advantage of the redshirt rule. So hopefully this might be the straw that breaks the camel's back that would allow that move to finally be accepted and widely adopted by the NCAA.
I think it's an interesting point that financial ramifications are going to be pretty serious from this, because let's keep in mind these programs are going to make less money right now, and they're going to have to deal with more scholarships. Now, Dez obviously mentioned it, and it's something that we've been talking about a little bit, but Ole Miss head coach Lane Kiffin has some unique ideas on what should happen for players that aren't able to play right now, and Cardell Jones, Ohio State quarterback extraordinaire, agrees with it. This is what they've said.
I think it's a shame. Kids are getting their team, their schools deciding, or their conferences deciding to shut down. And so they can't play. And a lot of them got a lot of money on the line for the next level, or they just want to play their last years. And so it's really unfortunate that the NCAA is not allowing them to transfer and be eligible immediately. We're being told that that wouldn't even go into the waiver process. So I feel really bad for those kids. It's not their fault. Why can't they come play somewhere? So that don't make any sense to me.
Ohio State do more for the Big Ten than the Big Ten do for Ohio State. Maybe they should allow Ohio State to explore other options this upcoming season. Or maybe they should allow teams that want to play explore other options in a way that's still safe and follow protocols of other, conferences so they can play ball. But maybe the Big Ten should allow these, or maybe, these two conferences, these two Power Five conferences who cancel their season, maybe they should allow those teams to explore other options and play in, other conferences. I mean, I know that's super different, but we live in a different time right now anyway.
I think the only person more fired up than Lane Kiffin was the dog while Lane was talking. Okay, so McElroy, I'll ask you, what should they do with transfers in this unique situation?
It's a really difficult spot, and it's really a catch-22 for the NCAA, because if you let guys go, then you're going to have mass exodus, and then the playing field will not be level for both Big Ten and Pac-12 teams in the near future. I think the way I would handle it is I would say if you're an upperclassman, you can transfer without penalty. If you're a junior or senior and you are trying to pursue an NFL career, you're trying to play out your last couple years on campus, and you don't want to waste one of those years on the spring season, you might want to enter the NFL draft. If you're a junior or senior, you're draft eligible, fine. You can transfer, no problem. Go ahead. You're likely going to opt out anyways and pursue an NFL dream just a couple months from now anyways. But if you're an underclassman, you have to stay put, because it would completely destroy the numbers for the Big 10 and the Pac-12. So I can understand Lane Kiffin's push completely given the situation he's inherited in Oxford, but you just can't do that. It would put the Big Ten and the Pac-12 way too far behind in 2021 and beyond.
Luganbill, thoughts on this one?
Well, Greg, I would agree with you, and I would take it one further step. I think some of the underclassmen, whether it's a redshirt freshman, redshirt sophomore, true freshman, if you allow the upperclassmen that have an opportunity to finish out their career or might have NFL aspirations, certainly an NFL talent level, now all of a sudden, those younger players are going to be immediately thrust into a different role where they're at right now. There may not be a need for them to go anywhere else, and they need to think long and hard about that, because the opportunity could present itself right then and there at the institution and the team that they're playing for. So if you let the upperclassmen go, the young guys are going to benefit. The older guys should benefit depending on their destination. And in this thing, Dez, everybody would win.
Yeah, I agree with Luganville. I think that if you do have the mass exodus, now I like Greg's model. If you're an upperclassman, fifth year senior, a guy who may be a fourth year senior, and you have aspirations of playing in the NFL, and you, I would give them the green light to transfer. But don't forget, yeah, you have those young guys who are willing, ready, and able to take their spots, and they want opportunities to play too. So I definitely will let the older kids, the fifth-year seniors, the fourth-year seniors, guys of that magnitude and that stature, transfer with no penalties. They can play immediately, and then I believe that helps the younger guys who are behind them. It also may help the scholarship situation for the guys who come in 2021 too.
I certainly don't want to throw any shade at Lane Kiffin, but I think Greg makes a good point. I wonder if Lane were a coach of Ohio State in the Big Ten, would he still support the very theory he's throwing out? I'm just saying. All right, coming up next, one of the biggest questions fans, parents, players are asking right now revolves around legal liabilities schools could face in the future. So we'll talk to Jay Billis about how all of that could play out and the effect it will have on the game next. Notre Dame has canceled practice today as they navigate what to do about rising COVID-19 cases across campus. The university is moving to remote instruction only until at least September 2nd, with five football players testing positive for COVID-19. The school plans to resume practice as soon as the medical staff tells them that it will be safe. This is Jacoby Stevens at LSU talking about practice.
The wristbands to be able to walk through the building, and you know, we have to wear a mask everywhere we go. We have to wear a mask on the field, and you know, just be safe and just be clean. It took a time to get used to. I mean, I know for me, I ran on the field for 3 years without wearing a mask. So I know the first couple of times I had to run back to my locker and go get my mask to put it back on.
At first, when like we started doing a social distancing thing, like it was kind of weird for me because like I have never been in an environment to where I can't dap my boys up, you know, hug them or nothing. So like it took some time for me to get used to it, but now we are all getting used to it now. So we're just getting better and better every day.
So there you hear from a couple of different players about what it's like to practice in this environment. It seems strange. So I'll go back to the guys that played the game. McElroy, when you look at guys practicing with masks on like that, what's it like trying to put your head around that?
It would be different, but if that's what it takes for us to play, then so be it. No problem whatsoever. I would gladly do whatever it took to make sure that I could make sure that I wasn't the one that was potentially spreading the virus amongst my teammates. It would be uncomfortable, yeah, especially knowing, you know, all the things that you've done over the course of 10, 15, 20 years as a football player, depending on how long you've played. But it would eventually be part of the routine, and it would be different, no doubt. No one's trying to suggest this year's going to look anything like years past, but it would be something that you'd have to adapt to, and the teams that are able to adapt to it best are going to be the ones that are best positioned to potentially have success this year.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I was watching Hard Knocks, and they showed the Rams and the Chargers, and that was one point that the coach made. Whichever teams are able to adapt and adjust the best under this new norm, those will be the teams that will be successful. And, Greg, you hit it on the head. I mean, it's something that you will be uncomfortable initially, but, you know, if you know this is what it's going to take so we can go ahead and have a team and have a season and go out here and make sure I'm not putting anyone in jeopardy as far as contracting this virus, then I would do what I have to do, and I would get used to it. So I know it's going to be different. May be out of breath and things of that nature. But football players, we are used to adjusting and adapting on the go. So they'll be okay, Lugs.
Hey, guys, remember when we used to have two days back in the old days, and you got your equipment, you got fitted, and you had to wear your helmet for that first 3 or 4 days, and it was miserable. The ear pads were too tight, and the forehead was too tight, and it wasn't enjoyable, right? And you know what? Then it goes away.
Right.
Because you're worried about other things, and you're involved in practice, and you've got meetings, and you've got study hall, and you've got training table, and you're in the weight room, and you're in the training room. And then all of a sudden, all of that stuff doesn't matter anymore because it becomes the norm. You just have to have a bit of an adjustment period. And what's really clear to me in listening to those players and seeing these protocols that these institutions have implemented is that There's no safer place for these kids to be at all. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
So, Luges, I find it interesting because athletes are such creatures of habit in general, right? So you get used to playing this way during practice. What's it like when you get into a Saturday environment and now everything feels just a little bit different? I mean, how does that affect you when practice and the game may feel different with the safety procedures?
Well, I don't know if it's the safety. I think once you get to that point, you're playing football and you've dealt with it, you deal with it. I think once you go from practice to games, if we get to that point, we all hope that we do, is now all of a sudden it's going to be the environment around you that's going to be difficult to adapt to, whether it's limited crowds, whether it's crowd noise, whether it's a lack of atmosphere both inside and outside of the stadium. But as far as what they've gone through, really, guys, this isn't even just about training camp. This goes back to when they first arrived back on campus, whether that was the middle of July, early July, whatever it may have been. They're way beyond Dez having to worry about now how different it's going to be with these safety protocols going from practice to the game.
Yeah, and once you start playing games, actual games, just the adrenaline, the excitement, the fact that it's finally here, that you've gone through so much to get to this point, you're not going to let any of these minor inconveniences creep in and hurt your chances of winning a game. I'm telling you, then you're going to be so focused on the opponent across from you, the new norm is going to be normal. It's something you're not even going to think about, because now it's all about make sure that you can beat the guy that's across from you, whether it's offensive lineman against a defensive lineman, a wideout against a DB. That's when your muscle memory kicks in, and now it just boils down to playing football, guys.
It's funny because I remember y'all, and maybe y'all had it, maybe you didn't. I just used to have such anxiety before a game, like such nervous energy, but controlled, and it made me feel normal. Like, I loved that feeling of uncertainty. I loved that, getting ready to head into a game. I wonder if this year, guys, given just how much goes into the week's work, not just on practice, but being smart about being socially distanced, being smart about not surrounding your teammates with bad situations, being smart about when you're away from the facility, that when it gets to game day, I wonder if these players are going to feel a sense of relief. Like, oh, my goodness, we made it. We can play today. Like, that's how I would probably feel under the circumstances, because I feel like the most stressful time when we were playing was game day. But now I think that might be one of the more relaxed days, because that's the day that you've worked towards. That's the day you've sacrificed for. And I'll be curious if the guys feel that way as they navigate throughout the season.
I'm still trying to figure out how quarterbacks and wide receivers yell at each other about getting them the ball during practice with these masks on. Okay, on a serious note, I should note that East Carolina has just announced that they've paused practices due to an uptick in COVID-19 cases. So we'll keep an eye on that. East Carolina pausing practices. So one team that is practicing right now is Texas A&M. They got a gauntlet of a schedule coming up after a couple big recruiting classes. We'll talk to head coach Jimbo Fisher next. College Football Live. We'll get his thoughts on how to navigate these waters. Texas A&M coming off an 8-5 season where they went 4-4 in SEC play, but the Aggies were just 1-5 against ranked teams, with the one team win coming in the Texas Bowl over Oklahoma State. Good news, though, coming off of back-to-back top 10 recruiting classes, where we take a look at this. Good news for them, also returning 8 starters on each offense and defense, including senior quarterback Kellen Mond, who finished 3rd in the SEC in passing yards last year. Again, with the top recruiting classes coming in, we're joined now by Texas A&M head coach Jimbo Fisher as we take a look at what to expect for the Aggies this season. Coach, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate you joining us. Obviously, a lot of conversation about COVID-19. We know the SEC is going to attempt to play. How involved in those conversations have you been with the conference overall?
Well, they've kept us very informed and what's going on and how the protocols that are going to happen. And it's a process every day. And we think we have very good protocols right now. The kids are following them very well. And I think we've you never get it under control, but we've got it to where the kids understand how it transmits, how it does it, and the actions in which they got to have, and they've been very good about that.
Well, with that being said, I think it's interesting from a head coach's standpoint. How do you find a balance between getting your guys ready on the field, but then also monitoring all of the safety protocols that are important to the way you practice?
Well, it's just a new normal, and it's been going on now for a month and a half or so since we've come back voluntary in June, and then our mandatory workouts on the 13th, and the kids are getting just the new normal. And I think getting back on the field now has kind of got them, I feel like they're less attention about things because they're focusing on football. But it's the same thing. The protocols are becoming very habit to them, and they are following those processes very well.
So I'll be the voice of Texas A&M fans here. Obviously, when the SEC released their 10-game schedule conference schedule, everybody was up in arms about it. Fans were reacting to it. What was your reaction to the way the schedule played out for Texas A&M?
About the way I thought it would. But, you know, this league is it's funny. Your transition games dictate your years, and you have some years that are extremely hard and some are that not as hard. But there's not an easy game in this league. Everybody here has great teams. But, you know, it's totally changed. We went through a tough transition last couple of years with our non-conference on the other side and had very good schedules. And we got another one this year, so it's just status quo for us.
I always think it's interesting from a coach's message standpoint when you start to look at what you're playing for. This year we don't know what the playoff situation is going to look like. We don't know what teams are going to be playing. When you go to your guys, what's the message for what they're fighting for with this season particularly?
Well, you're fighting for a championship. And you're fighting. It's an opportunity for you to play, compete, be as a team, the legacy your seniors leave, and the importance of those new guys and the impact they can have in the program about where they want to go. And it's no different than any other year.
You talk about legacy and leaders. You've obviously got a great leader in Kellen Mond. He's been very vocal this offseason as a leader with social justice issues and also with health and safety issues. What have you seen from him growth-wise that excites you about this season?
Well, I think one of the things is you talk about experience playing on the field, but guys have to accept that role as a leader and feel comfortable talking, voicing their opinion, and doing things in the right way and setting examples. And I think he's grown in that. And I think as a person, not just as an athlete, he's looking at things off the field. But I think he's, you know, learning in every aspect of that. But, you know, he's a very smart, intelligent, strong young man who is a great leader for us. He's doing a great job for us right now.
Coach, first and foremost, we hope you stay safe and healthy through the entirety of the season. Thanks so much for your time, my friend. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for being.
Sunday, we kick off our fifth annual Fantasy Football Marathon. More than 24 straight hours of coverage on ESPN, ESPN2, and the ESPN app. All the fantasy insight to get you ready for your season. You don't want to miss any of that. Obviously, the prospect of not playing this season is heartbreaking for so many players. Here's our own Andrea Adelson looking at how seniors specifically are feeling, realizing they're not going to get to play this fall.
This was supposed to be an incredible year for us. This was supposed to be a national championship for us. This was supposed to be the year that everything that we dreamed of came true.
When the schedule came out, you know, it felt good. You know, everybody was like happy to be back. Everyone was like, okay, we're optimistic for a season. We might have one.
On August 8th, the MAC became the first FBS conference to cancel fall sports. 3 days later, the Big Ten and Pac-12 followed suit.
No college football kickoffs from the LA Coliseum to Camp Randall. Two of the Power Five conferences are just pulling the plug.
It's just heartbreaking. Like, I see other people playing, it makes me like, dang, I want to go over there and play with them too, you know? So it's like, other people get to play, but I just got to watch them.
It's so hard for me as a player to have everyone else playing their sports, and then, you know, we're just not.
I was mad. I was like, this is my senior season. It's my last opportunity.
I'm more comfortable playing a football season than I am going into a classroom in person because I don't know where those people have been, but I know where my teammates have been.
The canceled fall season has met resistance. Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields started a petition to reinstate the season, and it currently has over 250,000 signatures. Many student athletes want to play and question the different decisions conferences made.
I still have no idea why the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are not playing, but it's safe for the SEC, Big 12, and SEC to play. I just hope they don't put any student athlete at risk and put them in danger just because they want to have football season.
This college football season for me has huge ramifications on the outcome of my life and what I want to do in my career. So having that taken away is so frustrating, and I feel like I should be able to have that choice for myself.
One season can change your life just like that. Joe Burrow last year compared to like 2 years ago, he wasn't even Joe Burrow like that. Now 1 year changed everything for him.
While there's still potential for the conferences that canceled fall sports to play in the spring of 2021, many players realize the decision is bigger than the game.
There's too much uncertainty with this virus. That's why I think the best decision was what the MAC made.
It's kind of hard to be mad about it or be like unhappy with it when in reality, like, it's bigger than football. It's the health and the, just so we can all live healthy, happy lives.
Tough questions are being asked right now about legal action when it comes to the decision to play or not play moving forward. We're joined now by Jay Billis to help us look at some of those complicated issues. Jay, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. In your opinion, would a school face some sort of liability issue if a player gets COVID and if it has long-term ramifications to their health?
Well, it depends, Jason. It really, all these schools and the conferences, they have a duty. And it's a duty to be reasonable under the circumstances. So if they have a duty of care and they breach that duty of care, and then there are damages on the part of the player, and the player can prove causation, that those damages were caused by the conference, by the school, by those decisions, then you could certainly have a cause of action that would lead to a problem for the universities and for the conferences. But it really depends on the advice they're getting and whether they're making reasonable decisions under the circumstances. And the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and a bunch of other conferences, that are the non-Power 5 conferences, have decided that the risk is too great. Not just the liability risk, that's a part of it, but they've decided that the health and safety risk is too great.
Jay, look at the other side of it. For players that don't get to play, what about loss of value, essentially, for players who feel that their draft status was hurt by not getting the opportunity to play?
Well, if you're asking whether the players may have a cause of action against the conference or the universities for not playing because somehow they've lost value or they lost an opportunity to realize upon their potential, look, in today's society, you could sue for anything, but that's unlikely to be sustained beyond a motion to dismiss, and I think they would be very unlikely to win that. Especially, you know, think of it this way. I mean, the players, the Big Ten players on one hand, came together and said, we want all these health and safety protocols. Our health and safety has to be first and foremost. And then they turned around and say, but if you don't play, we're going to sue you for any loss of value. I don't think the latter is sustainable at all. And I don't think there's any cause of action there at all.
So, Jay, transparency seems to be the other big issue. In your opinion, do taxpayers have legal standing to demand more information, especially from publicly funded schools?
Well, they certainly have the standing to demand it because I've been demanding it. And I think that the conferences, the NCAA, with their medical panels, I think they owe that information to the public. They owe it to the players. They owe it to staff and employees so they can make informed decisions. But I think you're going to see in the very near future, there's an attorney out there who's had great success in NCAA-related cases named Tom Mars. And Tom has put out a Freedom of Information Act request not only to the Big Ten, but to all the schools within the Big Ten. And I don't know exactly what the time frame for getting responses to those, but he's asking for emails and correspondence for the decision and from the Big Ten and all the member institutions. So we're going to see some information come out. It is not going to change the outcome. The Big Ten, the Pac-12, they were not unreasonable in their decision. We can certainly disagree with it. But even if, Jason, even if the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 go forward and have very successful football seasons, and we're all hoping that they do, that doesn't necessarily make the Big Ten and the Pac-12's decision wrong, nor does it make it unreasonable in any way.
So when they get this information through Freedom of Information Act, to that end, what can they really do with it, Jay?
Not much, really. I think it just would give further illumination into the reasons behind the decision and whether we had unanimity among the Big Ten presidents or things like that. There might be some things that come out that may be embarrassing to some people about some things that they said, but I don't think it'll be that big of a deal. You know, it's sort of an issue of were people being honest while this was going on. And they don't have a duty to do that. But I don't have a problem with any of this stuff. It just seems like, you know, on one hand, we're calling for safety for the players, and we should. But it's not just an amateur thing. Like, that's where I think the commissioners, Commissioner Scott, Commissioner Warren, made a little bit of a mistake. They were saying, well, you know, you have to remember these are amateur student athletes, as if they're willing to put professionals at risk or their employees at risk because they're paid, you know, without mincing words. That's just stupid. You know, organizations take care of their people, period. And health and safety is important no matter whether you're paid, unpaid, employee, non-employee, independent contractor, what have you. But when you're talking about health and safety, and then it's difficult sort of to turn around and then say, but you have to go forward because I have a lot at stake here. Those can be contrary positions.
Jay, as always, we appreciate your expertise. You guys can check him out tonight on the great draft broadcast for the NBA Draft Lottery. Jay, thanks for joining us and giving us your insight.
That's $700 an hour, by the way.
Perfect. Just bill the bosses. They'll take care of all of it. Oh, always great stuff there. Look, things haven't been easy this offseason for Coach Mike Gundy in Oklahoma State. He's made an unorthodox statement. The question is, can it help or hurt within the program? You'll hear it next. Plus, Saturday, another UFC fight night from Vegas. Pedro Munhoz takes on former lightweight champ Frankie Edgar in the bantamweight main event. The main card starts at 8:30 Eastern on ESPN with the prelims 5:30 Eastern on ESPN+.
College Football Live is brought to you by Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit, and USAA, proud supporter of the military community. What you're made of, we're made for.
We've done this before, okay? When they come in here and sit in this team room every day, they need to be spread out white, black. But we need to get the different races in this room mixed up. So you sit next to them. If you sit next to them enough, you're going to talk to them. Same thing needs happening in the locker room. I think those two things need to be done. I'm just sitting in here as a friend. I'm just a normal guy, just like you right now. If you say, Coach, you're completely crazy, that will never work, I'm good. You're not going to upset me. I just see all this talking going on. What's the plan? And what can we actually do here to make a difference?
Check out the first two episodes of Our Time, Oklahoma State football and all-access series surrounding the Oklahoma State Cowboys, including Mike Gundy. You can check it out on ESPN+. So a lot to react there. Tom Luganville, what's your reaction to what we just heard from Coach Gundy?
Well, listen, I've been on teams where you walk into the staff meeting room or the team meeting room or the dining hall or what have you, and you're not working together, all right? But I've also been on teams where everybody just commingled. And the hope if you're a coaching staff and a head coach is that you don't have to make that a mandate. The hope is that it happens on its own, because that's a telltale sign of what type of people and what type of football team that you're going to have in your locker room.
Dez, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, guys, that's like Mike Gundy. I think that's Mike Gundy trying to help in the most Mike Gundy way possible. it seems like his heart was in the right place. I agree with Luganville, though. You can't force it. You can't, you know, just make it happen. If he wants to start to have open dialogue, that's the first step in trying to make these guys, I guess, be able to coexist better and have honest, open dialogue. That's what I think they should do, Greg.
McElroy, I'd let you get in, but I got to tell everybody SportsCenter's coming up and then remind everybody that nobody there will have a shirt-tie combo this fire. I'm just saying, thanks for hanging out with the SportsCenter coming up now.